This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support. And I apologize, in the early going at least, this hour, we are once again without phones. Fortunately, our guests are in studio. Otherwise, you'd hear me pontificating for an hour, and that might not be good radio. But we have the esteemed Janae Slocum to start with us, PhD, Director of the Riley Center for Public Affairs, Media and Public Affairs at the Manship School, where she graduated in the year of 1999, back in the last century, and then went off to the University of California, Los Angeles, as in UCLA, and received her PhD. Two great universities that converged in the Rose Bowl on September 4th.
That's right.
And
that's
who
right.
won?
Oh, do we really need to talk about that?
UCLA 38-27, and Coach O was lamenting the fact that the UCLA fans were wearing sissy blue shirts. Well, they flexed their muscles in those sissy blue shirts, and he'll play another team that wears blue this Saturday, and we'll see if Kentucky in its sissy blue uniforms does the same thing to Coach O that UCLA did. But before we get to the Riley Center, and there is a major event, you went to both universities. Beautiful campuses, by the way.
Absolutely.
What are the biggest distinctions?
I mean, I think the obvious one is just the level of funding that the UC system receives and the resources that are available to you as a student, both in terms of the facilities as well as the finances available to you to do research and to study.
And the libraries are a bit different too, aren't they?
Just a tiny bit.
Just a tiny bit.
Yeah. Although the graduate library, the research library, looks an awful lot like our library.
Hill Memorial Library, right?
No, that's Royce Hall. That's the old library. The research library looks a lot like what used to be called Middleton.
Yeah.
But it's in much better shape.
But Powell Library is this ornate Gothic structure.
Yes.
That looks how a library should look. And we've got what was the Middleton Library that now the LSU Library is, it is called. The basement is leaking, and it needs a lot of work. And really, LSU needs a new library.
They really do. It's it is kind of a sad place to go into.
It is. I had an erudite guy, a college graduate, though, tell me, you know, libraries are passe, that we don't need them anymore, that we can get everything we want in my pocket, you know. And there probably is as much information in my pocket as there is in the library, but I still think we need libraries.
I would agree. I think libraries are changing, and, you know, we need to think of them as more spaces where you go and do study as well as to connect with people around education and community.
And as mentioned, Janae Slocum is director of the Riley Center for Media and Public Affairs, and they regularly have forums, and there is one coming in just a few days, but it is designed to have people think. And recently we had George Will on the show, and he expressed some concern about college campuses and the lack of diversity in thought. Now, you have tried to accomplish that with the Riley Center, and even have gotten some pushback from the state legislature, haven't you?
We did. We've had a series for the last year that looks at racism and systemic racism specifically. We've done that in partnership with Southern University, the NAACP Conference of Louisiana, and the Louisiana Budget Project. And, you know, we've really been looking at a wide array of events, or rather issues related to racism. And we did get some pushback last year.
That's unfortunate. But you have a forum coming up. And sometimes when I say it's unfortunate, you want people to react. Sometimes it's good when they get mad. You know, I take it as a compliment when I get hate mail to a certain extent, to a certain extent. Some of these people on these sites, though, go on anonymously. They're not worth anybody's time, and they're losers. Otherwise, they would come out of their little cubby holes and identify themselves and state to the world who they are and what they think. But rather, they want the cloak of anonymity, and they're cowards, keyboard cowards. But that aside, you got a forum coming up, and your ideas to stimulate thought. Tell us about the first one coming in a few days.
The next one that we have is really focused on some research that we were doing at the Riley Center last year with Dr. Fanny Ramirez. And she, during COVID, really looked at how organizations supporting mostly women, but victims of domestic violence, how they were supporting those individuals through technology. And also we'll be discussing how they continue to use technology even after lockdown ended.
So who's on the panel?
Well, we've got Dr. Fanny Ramirez, who is the leader on that research, as well as her graduate assistant, Sarah Carpenter. And then we have a number of folks who really work in that area, mostly in kind of the legal arena. Corey Alford, who is with the Louisiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And I am going to butcher her name, Wonjinia Atkins, who is with the Louisiana Department of Justice, as well as Danielle Slakoff, who is a professor out at California State University, Sacramento.
And when will this be?
Wednesday, October 13th.
So it's at 8 days.
Mm-hmm. At 1:30 p.m. It's on Zoom, and you can go to our website, lsurileycenter.com, and you can find the links to that, and you can sign up for it.
All right. So it's 10:13 is in 8 days. When will you start doing these with actual people in their places? And an audience and the whole deal.
Well, we had hoped that we would be back doing that this fall, and we had plans to do that. We actually had to, we can use my our new favorite word, pivot, back to virtual and postpone a number of events. But we're hoping that next spring we'll be back in person, at least in some way.
And we have found that we can do things Zooming, but it's not the same.
It's not the same. I think one thing we've learned is that for certain things, we definitely will continue with virtual formats. You can get panelists from far away, and they don't have to travel. But we will, you know, we really do want to be back in person. There's a lot lost when you're not in person.
And today is our guest follows media and public affairs. The front page story above everything else in the world is Facebook apps crash, leaving billions cut off. Outage lasting hours has global impact. This from the New York Times with a dateline from San Francisco. Facebook and its family of apps, including Instagram and WhatsApp, were inaccessible for hours Monday, taking out vital communications used by billions and showcasing just how dependent the world has become on a company that is under intense scrutiny. Facebook apps, which include Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, Messenger, and Oculus, began displaying error messages around 10:40 our time yesterday. Within minutes, Facebook had disappeared from the internet. The outage lasted over 5 hours before some apps slowly flickered back to life, and though the company cautioned the services would take time to stabilize, and even so, the impact was far-reaching and severe. Facebook has built itself into a linchpin platform with messaging, live streaming, virtual reality, many other digital services. In some countries like Myanmar and India, Facebook is synonymous with the internet. More than 3.5 billion people around the world use Facebook, Instagram, Messenger, and WhatsApp to communicate with friends and family, distribute political messaging, and expand their businesses through advertising and outreach. So this is a truly major cataclysmic event, and who would have thought in 1999 when you graduated from the Manship School that we would be talking about 3.5 billion people in the same place and changing the world, not only when they're on that particular location, but when it's gone, it's like the world is stopped.
It really is. I mean, as far as our communication at the Riley Center, it was stopped. I know for me, I really needed to find a babysitter for this Friday, and my list was on Facebook. So
really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I had to wait until they came back online.
Really? So your world was paralyzed too?
Exactly. I think it's always we see how dangerous it is when we rely so much on one or two or three particular companies for, you know, everything that we do. And so I think it's just an unfortunate time for Facebook, given that the reports, or rather the whistleblower, came out, I believe, yesterday.
Well, with that kind of reach, there is enormous power. Mm-hmm. And with that power comes responsibility. Is Facebook acting responsibly?
It doesn't seem that they are. It seems like they have a lot of work to do.
Why don't they get a competitor? Is that possible at this point, a viable competitor?
Oh, I'm the wrong person to ask about that, but I think anytime you find that someone's able to, or a company's able to compete with an entity like that, it's always a surprise. They come out of nowhere.
It is a major development, and hopefully today will be different. And in a bit, we're going to talk about the markets. And, of course, people go on the Facebook app and others to find out what's happening in the world. And right now, after a slew of mostly bad days, the Dow is up in the early going, 333 points. So that's good news. So we'll get the view from Anderson and Dent when we start our conversation with them in just a bit. But we're going to spend a bit more time with Janae Slocum of the Riley Center. Again, the first forum coming, it is a Zoom event, 10/13, as in 8 days from now. And quickly, the place to go to register and such is?
LSURileyCenter.com.
LSURileyCenter.com. And we'll be back with Dr. Janae Slocum after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Janae Slocum is with him, with us. Dr. Slocum is director of the Riley Center for Media and Public Affairs at Louisiana State University. She speaks Portuguese and Spanish in addition to English, which we've been hearing. But you spent much time in South America, didn't you? South and Central America?
I did. I was there for pretty close to a decade in total. It's a wonderful place. I enjoyed my time there.
What was it about it that was so captivating?
Well, I spent most of my time in Brazil, and I think what really attracted me to Brazil in particular more than any other place is that it's in some ways really similar to Louisiana. I always described it as Louisiana in Portuguese. The food in some ways is really similar. You've got a lot of European, but particularly African influences from the same parts of Africa because, you know, Brazil has had a long history of slavery as well.
And it's a huge country.
It is a big place. Yeah. There's a lot to see.
Rio de Janeiro and Sao Paulo, they have huge population bases. Where were you?
I was mostly in Rio de Janeiro. I spent some time in Salvador, which is in the northern portion of the country.
But you liked it, but you came back.
I did. I was ready to come back. I was ready to come back.
After 10 years, though, sometimes people stay away a decade, they never come back. But you came back not only to the United States, but where you got your undergraduate degree. Was that by design?
No, I originally came back to go work at LED, of all places. Stephen Moray was the secretary at the time, mm-hmm. and he and I had known each other for a long time. But I came back for that, thought I would be here for 3 or 4 years, and I'm still here, and I'm still enjoying it.
Well, it's about time for us to catch up with Stephen Moray. he is a fine man. He wanted to be president of LSU. But, you know, Bobby Jindal not only blew it as far as his own political ambitions, but the people around him, their association with him has not been helpful to their future advancement. Stephen Moray, if he had been under a different administration, might very well have achieved his goal, and he still could. He's still a young man, but a remarkable man, and
definitely,
and a really, really sharp guy.
They are doing some amazing things over in Virginia. Louisiana really lost quite a bit when we lost Stephen Moray.
Yep, and hopefully he will come back. But I know he wanted to be president of LSU. He was getting his PhD while he was running the Department of Economic Development. He was going to Philadelphia, and I think he got it from the University of Pennsylvania.
He did.
And so he is now Dr. Stephen Moray, and it all started, this kid from Mississippi who was in the Tiger Band, never been to an LSU football game, and he came here, and he did great things for our state, but a fine gentleman, and hopefully he will come back in some capacity. But LSU does have a new person in charge, and it is the first black person to lead the university. By the way, I got chided, and I think rightfully so. I, like many other people, identified William Tate as the first African-American president. Well, we had Bill Jenkins, who was from Pretoria, South Africa. So technically, he was the first African-American to lead LSU. In fact, it was Andy O'Brien who chided Tiger Rag for identifying Bill Tate is the first African American.
Well, but he's certainly the first black person.
He's the first black person. And he's living on Lakeshore Drive, where King Alexander never set up shop. So he's ingrained, and his family's there, and he seems to, so far, enjoy what he's doing. But he's got his hands full.
He does. Anybody would. And, you know, LSU has very recently gone through some challenging times, and I think that those challenges are going to continue based on what we're seeing.
Well, what do you make of what's going on as far as the investigation into sexual misconduct? How does this affect the life at the Manship School?
I think anytime you're working in an institution that's facing these sort of issues, it's it definitely puts a damper on the culture and the environment. I think in terms of what the university does, we do have new leadership, and I would expect that they would be reconsidering and looking at kind of what has happened over the last year and a half.
Are you treated differently now to some extent in a better way than you were, say, when you were here more than 20 years ago as an undergraduate, or are things about the same?
I think that people are more conscious of the their behavior with women and others. You know, I still see some of the bad behavior, for sure.
Yeah. And I remarked on the show last week that back in the day when you were an undergraduate, the associate dean of the Manship School, he turned a professor, an African-American female, Diane Piper, over his knee and said, "You've been a bad, bad girl," when she announced she was leaving for another job. Now, today that would not be accepted. Then there was a brief hiatus for the associate dean, Richard Nelson, but ultimately he kept his job. Isn't that amazing that he actually kept his job?
It is amazing, and one would hope that that would not be the case now. I think we still have a long way to go. I think that particular case was egregious and witnessed and very public, so it is kind of shocking that he remained on the faculty.
It was. And my dear friend and mentor, one of my mentors, Dr. Ron Gary, was a witness to it. And so we know it happened. Dr. Gary doesn't lie, and he saw it. And but Dean Anderson, Dean Nelson, excuse me, ended up staying for a long time. And things have changed. And that, thank God, is for the better, that kind of behavior would not be tolerated. But as far as future forums, you do this on a fairly regular basis, even in the Zoom age. What's after October 13th? What's next in the planning for you, Dr. Slocum?
Well, our next several events after our event next week on the 13th are part of our Racism Dismantling the System program. The first is going to focus on Brown versus Board of Education and how racism is embedded in our educational systems and how that has resulted in kind of what we see right now. And then we'll also have another event that's focused on the 125th anniversary of Plessy versus Ferguson. And we're super excited that we actually will have descendants of Plessy and Ferguson. We'll have Phoebe Ferguson and Keith Plessy. And we'll also have Dr. Albert Samuels moderating that conversation. And for our conversation on education, we're going to have A.P. Thoreau. So we're lucky that we get some really great guests on our panels who are incredibly informed about the topics that we discuss.
And this is largely about race. And it continues to be an issue, if not the issue of the age. But with it goes some pushback, I'm sure, about why do you want to stir things up? How do you answer those who say, look, we ought to just move along and be kind and not stir the pot?
Oh, the pot is already stirred. We're just talking about it. So I think it's, you know, as an entity that is the outreach and engagement arm of a mass communication school focused on public policy, if we're not talking about race, we're not doing our job.
Now, 1013 is the next one. And again, it's lsurileycenter.com. The Brown versus Board of Education event is scheduled for?
That is going to be October 26th.
And the other one?
And the next one is November 4th.
Okay. So October 26th and November 4th. And you'll have a Plessy and a Ferguson.
A Plessy and a Ferguson.
So that's strong stuff from the Riley Center. And the others right now, does it look like it's going to be a Zoom thing? Or
all of our events this fall are Zoom. So, we're all virtual. We're hoping that in the spring we can at least get a few in-person events.
Well, hopefully we'll have a Plessy and a Ferguson on our show. That would be neat.
So, we're working on it.
Yeah, I'd like that a lot. But you're doing fine work at the Riley Center. And as you know, when you were an undergraduate a couple of decades ago, a little over 20 years ago, LSU didn't have all these bells and whistles. Not the journalism school anyway, but now it is one of the best in the whole wide world. And it is because of the Riley Center and some people who have believed in the quality of journalism and LSU being at the forefront of that endeavor.
The degree of investment is staggering compared to when I was a student there. And the quality of our students and our faculty are tip top.
Well, we thank you. Always a pleasure, and keep up your good work, Dr. Janae Slocum, graduate of LSU's Manship School and a PhD from UCLA.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll be back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. I would give the number, but right now our phones are still down. We've had consistent issues with Gage Telephone since the phones were replaced, and supposedly this was an enhancement, but Gage has said that we have been victimized by hackers from God knows where, maybe the Kremlin. But at any rate, we have no phones to go to for you right now, but we can take emails. So send emails if you so choose, and we would like that, to talk@talklouisiana.org. And we're joined in studio by seasoned financial advisors and frequent contributors to this program, Fred Dent, Dent Wealth Management, and Andy Anderson of B.F. Anderson and Associates. They have different philosophies as far as investment, but they both like the stock market, and the stock market has not been kind in recent days, but you have to look at the big picture, and it is up in the early going 430 points this morning and 34,441. It was right at 31,000 on the 20th of January when Joseph Robinette Biden became the 46th American president. So is this panic time, Fred Dent, or is this just a blip and the Dow will continue to go up, up and away? What do you think?
Well, I have no idea where the market's going, but it's interesting that you call us in for this discussion today. The S&P 500 is up 16% year-to-date. The Dow is up 13%, but we're 5% off of the highs. I mean, 5% pullback, 10% pullback, 15% pullback. These are normal processes that the markets go through, so there's really no need to panic. But I think investors are faced with a couple of conundrums right now, and I guess we can talk about inflation and purchasing power and taxes and whatnot.
What about all the problems right now on Capitol Hill coming to some kind of an agreement on infrastructure and things that would stimulate the economy?
Well, that is an issue. It always seems, though, that they tend to work that out over time. It's just a matter of time of brinksmanship and taking it to the edge, and then a deal is cut and we move on.
But is the market responding to that, or is that a non-issue right now? What do you think?
I don't think that the market is responding to that particular topic. I think it's watching very carefully valuations, interest rates, inflation more than anything, and some other things going on, but not what's going on in Congress.
And for those who've not heard you and Andy together, I mentioned you both like stocks a lot, but you're a long haul guy and you're into a lot of stocks, right?
We have stocks in all sectors, both domestic and international. We have small cap, large cap, value. We believe in diversification to smooth the ride.
And then Andy Anderson, the riverboat gambler.
We think diversification is a necessity for the beginner. Now, once you learn how to analyze companies, diversification kind of becomes an enemy in a way. So if you know how to analyze companies and you know how to analyze investments, you should not be overly diversified. However, if you don't know how to do these things, you should be just in an S&P 500 index fund.
All right. So you're saying you know how to do it, that you got a better mousetrap.
We know how to analyze companies.
So how many stocks do you have in your—
I have three right now.
Three?
Yeah, making money in all three.
Yeah, but that's dangerous, isn't it?
Who says? Well, when they're the best companies.
Okay.
Well, I mean, this is what Buffett talks about. I mean, Warren Buffett's very clear on the subject. If you know how to analyze companies and you can find really good stuff. Now, I'm talking about golden things. Like Buffett found Geico back in the 50s and the 60s. It was a gold mine. They sold insurance to teachers, Government Employees Insurance Corporation. So the teachers had steady jobs, paid their premiums. But, you know, the thing about a Ponzi scheme is that you rob Peter to pay Paul, okay? So they pay the premiums, right, so they're robbing Peter, and they're not, they don't have to pay a lot of claims because the teachers had such good driving.
All right, we're hearing the
so it was a gold mine.
Voice of B.F. Andy Anderson and Fred Columbus Dent.
Okay, well, Buffett put half his portfolio
all right, but he has more than three stocks, though.
Well, I'm talking about what made him great.
Well, he's great now, though, and Berkshire Hathaway is how many stocks?
I have no idea.
400, probably 400.
400.
Yeah.
And so he's so
watered down.
The guy you just quoted is the sage, the oracle of Omaha.
Yeah, because he manages $100 billion.
You have three. What are the three?
I have an energy stock. We're seeing a lot of activity in energy right now, mainly natural gas. Yeah. We have a company called Antero, which is operating out of the Marcellus Shale. And we're possibly going to see $100 oil.
All right, so what's the symbol on that one?
AR.
AR, and I bet you, I'm just guessing, I bet you have Tesla.
We have Tesla. The thing about Tesla that you have to understand is that Elon Musk is Thomas Edison, basically. He is a serial inventor, and he has invented something that nobody that I ever run across is talking about, and it's called the Octovalve. Very few people are talking about this, but it is a really, really big deal.
Okay, and Tesla's going up.
Yep.
Continues to go up.
It's about to break 800.
It's been over 400.
Right. Back in February, we hit 900 and went through a consolidation phase. We've been fooling with this stock since 2012 when it was less than a $10 billion company.
But you've been in and out.
Well, that's just my style.
But the third one?
A company called Paycom, which is involved in HR software, cradle-to-grave software. It takes the employee from the recruitment stage all the way to retirement. So we meet all the COBRA requirements and so forth, all the regulatory requirements. These software companies are somewhat like gold mines like Geico because they're pulling in revenue on a subscription basis, but their expenses just aren't – they have very high profit margins. Mm-hmm. So we've been in and out of the software stocks all year and have done quite well in them.
All right. So – Andy Anderson's into three stocks, Fred Dent's into too many to count, but you both had success. Now, is that success related to the market just over time continuing to grow, or is it related to your particular expertise, Fred?
I would say the biggest thing is not making mistakes, keeping our clients from not bailing out when a little turbulence hits the air. And staying in the course and developing a plan.
You don't parachute out of an airplane when there's a little turbulence.
I mean, if you do that, I've been through 9 significant declines in my career, and they're not pleasant. They don't feel good. Nobody likes them. But the biggest role that we play is keeping our clients on board. And so far, that strategy has always paid off. Every single one of our clients has done well.
We think the biggest mistake that investors make is they dabble in stocks and tips. That, you know, with the internet and with CNBC and with all that's going on out there, we, as registered investment advisors, we're getting overwhelmed with people calling us up talking about tips that they're getting from the media. And
well,
it's just not a good idea.
What's just happened here in the last 5-10 minutes? Tips from the media. We are on media.
Well, yeah,
three stocks have been mentioned.
Three stocks. You're sounding a lot like Cramer. He goes on the air and he mentions these stocks and.
Right.
He probably is investing in them. In fact, Trump used to do that. He used to say, I'm going to buy Sears or some company and tell a reporter. And then, of course, Sears stock would go up and Trump would invest in the stock.
I'm talking about kind of like this GameStop stuff, this Reddit stuff, this, you know, Robinhood. You know, we're getting calls from clients where they're saying, in fact, I refer to my clients as partners. My partners are calling me up and saying, my son's a financial genius. My daughter's a financial genius. She's getting these tips over the internet. And I'll give you an example. He had one tip. It was at $24, and I told him not to buy it, and it's now like it's like $6.
Here's one from Holly in the Garden District about cryptocurrency. Are you big into that, Fred?
I personally happen to own Bitcoin, and I wish I could find the wallet that was on my computer from when Bitcoin first hit. I had 10 Bitcoin on a computer at $1. And that computer was since sold. That'd be worth a lot of money now. But I do have some Bitcoin, and I believe in the blockchain as the future. However, we do not recommend it to our clients because at this point, there is so much speculation going on with all cyber currencies. Nobody really understands it who invests in it unless you're a real specialist in it. And it seems to me with all of these various coins coming out that we're probably like the internet in the year 2000 when you could throw a dart at the board and pick a stock and it would go up. But we all know how that ended.
You know, I read a book recently that I would really recommend. It's called The Ponzi Scheme. And it's the story of Charles Ponzi going back to 1919. So when things like Bitcoin, first of all, it's a non-producing asset. It doesn't produce anything. And it's like, okay, it may not be a Ponzi scheme, but it sure looks like one. So when I see something like that, I say, you know, this kind of looks like a Ponzi scheme. I totally avoid it.
I disagree. It's not a Ponzi scheme. Bitcoin has a future, but it is a currency. It's not an investment.
It's not a currency. It's speculative. It's too volatile to be a currency. How many people you know are using Bitcoin for anything?
Do your research.
All right. Well, Andy's he's an old school guy. You don't sell short either, do you?
No, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, look, we used to have a guy on here I can remember years ago about going short. And I always told him, I said, never short a bull market. And by God, we've been in a bull market, man. I sure wouldn't want to be shorting in this.
But sometimes what goes up must come down.
Yeah, but it's spinning silly. It's no longer investing. It's just purity gambling.
Well, I think the stock market by nature is a gamble, isn't it?
Well, it's a speculation.
I think once you said it was unpatriotic to sell short.
I just think it's a silly process. I mean,
the objective here is
capital formation.
It's all about knowing what you're doing. Like Tesla, when it went up to 900, you know it's going to come down. It's not going to come down forever, but if you play right.
But you're getting distracted and you're wasting your time.
Okay. Do you ever sell short, Fred?
No, I don't. But I believe that short sellers play a valuable liquidity function in the market, and people are entitled to make bets against their investments. I think it's a very, very, as Andy has said, a very difficult strategy to pull off.
You only got so much time in this life to make it happen. You can waste your time with Bitcoin. You can waste your time with short selling. Go out and find good companies. That's the message.
But a listener... this is Heather, nice to hear from some female in Goodwood, saying that when you buy and sell stocks like you do with Tesla, where you're getting in and getting out, by essence, by extrapolation, you're selling short because you're expecting the stock to go down and then for you to get in at a lower level, right?
You know, I don't think it's shorting. I mean, what it is I'll sell Tesla and go buy something else.
All right.
That I find more attractive at the time.
And then you'll get back in.
I didn't think I was ever going to get back into Tesla.
Well, we do have to take a break, and we will return with Anderson and Dent after this quick pause. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. We do apologize that at this point we're unable to take your phone calls, but we can take emails to talk@talklouisiana.org to seasoned political analyst Fred Dent of Dent Wealth Management, Wealth Advisors. And Andy Anderson of BF Anderson and Associates. You can send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. And we do have an educated audience, an enlightened one, and many listeners have heard these gentlemen before. And one notes that it was 34 years ago this month, 1987. The year was October 19th. It was Black Monday. And Fred Dent, you were on your first day on the job, right?
Yes.
Where were you?
I was in Manhattan, literally on the street called Wall, fresh out of LSU, $12 to my name, one suit, one tie, and wondering what in the world have I got myself into.
I had started a brokerage firm that year, actually had 16 brokers working for me.
That was a bad day, wasn't it?
It was a rough day. I had an old Bunker Ramo quote machine, and I just kept looking at it, and it was just dropping like a rock.
The Dow, of course, in that time was in the low thousands, a couple of thousand, but the percentage loss, which is always what really counts.
It was 30%.
No, 22% for the day.
Well, anyway, point is that the Federal Reserve is what pretty much triggered that event.
How so?
Well, they started raising interest rates.
Well, Fred, do interest rates always mean the stocks go down?
Not always, but it's a signal, especially with, I mean, investors right now are facing a conundrum. If they're sitting in cash, they're not earning anything on the cash. And inflation, at least in the last year, has been running at 5%. So even if you do nothing and just sit, you've lost 5% of purchasing power on your money. And that's really what matters, is purchasing power, not the actual nominal dollars.
All right. Send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. And I do have some listeners who have sent some emails. And naturally, when we have these gentlemen on, they want to know about individual stocks. And one of those, which I think is still the most lucrative company in the world as far as market value, Apple, $2.3 trillion. How's Apple? Apple a good buy?
You know, when we analyze companies, one of the first numbers we look at is market cap. And, for example, Tesla is now approaching $800 billion. Now, we started buying that company when it was under $10 billion. Now, Apple, we started buying, and you remember the old nickname, Andy Apple Anderson.
But you got out.
But we got out.
You should have held on. It's still going up.
I moved on to Tesla. After Tesla, I'll move on to something else. But I've got to find things. In other words, it gets to a point where I say, okay, what is the chances I can double my money in this thing? Well, if I'm going to double my money from here in Tesla, that becomes a $1.6 trillion company, you know? And so it really gets to where you're pushing on a string here. So the name of the game, in my opinion, is to find a small company that will become big.
What about Apple? You
know? I love Apple. I mean, I use their products. I'm an Apple guy, but I don't know anything about the stock valuation. I think Apple is here to stay. They're going to do well. They're entrenched in most of our psyches in our lives, for those of you who use an iPhone and the Macintosh. But in terms of whether the stock is a buyer right now, I don't know.
Well, for a person in his late 60s, as one of our guests is, Apple is a good safe investment, isn't it?
Yeah, but I'm not into safe. I mean, come on,
at least
man.
You admit it.
I mean, but some people would say they like Exxon. Exxon looks like a Ponzi scheme to me.
Exxon, now come on.
But Exxon earned or lost last year over $3 a share, almost $4 a share. They're paying a dividend of about $4 a share. So they're losing $4, paying out $4.
Well, if you're a shareholder, you get dividends. In debt. You don't like dividends either, which
it doesn't make any sense.
Well, I'm not sure you're right, but
I mean, what's the point?
It's money is money. Money is money, Fred.
Look, you want to see a company that is strong, that has great products and services, that's going to build its book value.
Okay, when you're assessing a stock, Fred, do you take into account dividends, or is that something that's just lanyap?
Dividends are important, and dividend-yielding stocks are an important area to be invested in, but growth stocks are also important to be invested in.
The problem with the dividend is that it entraps the management, mm-hmm. where they can't cut it. So take General Electric. Take Eastman Kodak. All these companies historically have gotten into serious trouble because they wouldn't cut the dividend. Exxon is not cutting the dividend. But
Kodak, of course, got changed by the world changing.
Rebecca Eastman, George Eastman's daughter, who was controlled the trust.
Well, that's
would not cut the dividend and build digital cameras, and that's why they're gone.
More likely to get Exxon is the world changing than its dividends, but. Exxon, right now, a listener notes, it's about $65 a share. I'm looking, in October a year ago, it was below 40. So if you timed it right, Andy, you would have done really well investing in Exxon.
Well,
stock.
Good luck on that. You know, I'm just saying,
Exxon has doubled.
My dad worked for Standard Oil.
Well, if you time it right, it can work for you if you bought a year ago.
But then again, it's just distracting. It's just you could have bought a lot of things a year ago.
And they'd be worth twice what they are now? I don't know about that.
Jim, let me draw a contrast here. Let me draw a contest. The dialogue that you guys are entering into is the nature of speculation and conjecture and forecasting, and it's a fool's errand. Our clients are concerned, number one, with protecting their wealth. They don't want to lose what they have. They've worked hard to get it. And they want to keep it. That doesn't mean they're not going to have fluctuations
in
their investments.
It's such a myth that you're not speculating. Come on. Everything's a speculation. There is no such thing.
Driving down the road is a speculation because there's a risk that you might get killed.
In other words, what's the more truthful word? Speculation or investing long term? Everybody has to speculate. There's no getting around it. No speculation, no return.
Well, you have different philosophies, but it's worked for both of you. And my guess is that you have had better years than Fred has, but over the long haul, I bet he's done better than you have.
I don't know. He doesn't
roll the dice the way you do.
Since 1995, my partners have made 20 times their money.
Well, the market since 1995, what has it done?
Well, that's what I'm telling you. We caught Amazon in 1997 at $1 a share, split adjusted, and we rode it to 100.
Well, I know the stock market was 3240 when Bill Clinton, the Dow was, when he took office. And today it's
34.
So
it's up tenfold.
It's up about 11-fold.
Yeah. And not including dividends.
Not including dividends. There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Look, like I say, the dividend thing is great. I think everybody would understand that. Why do people want dividends? Because it's easy. It's easy to understand. It's like a CD, you know, that kind of thing. But the company has a choice. They can either send the money out or they can retain the earnings and build the book value, and the company becomes stronger, not weaker. This is what General Electric did. They kept paying that dividend, and they kept having the corporate jets and party, and the company is almost went bankrupt.
Okay, got some good questions here. Here from Mike Wolf. Could you ask Fred and Andy to describe what they would consider default on the federal debt?
Say it again, please.
The default on the federal debt, you know, if we don't raise the debt ceiling— and suddenly the government's not paying its bills, what happens?
I don't know what happens to the market. Interest rates would probably go higher simply because there's more credit risk in the market.
Okay, Jim, who controls Congress? Who controls Congress?
Well, the people who vote.
What party? What party controls?
Well, that's even subject to conjecture.
Well, it's Democrats.
Democrats have a numerical majority.
Joe Biden's Democrat.
Right.
So what's the big problem here?
Well,
just pass the damn thing.
Well, you've got a couple of Democrats in the Senate who aren't on the train, so that creates some problems.
I don't believe that.
Well, you haven't been following the news then, because Kyrsten Sinema is probably the one who controls Congress right now. Ricky Causey writes, the flaw with so much investment is it often pushes money in directions that are contrary to the betterment of the world. For example, one of your guests mentioned natural gas being a hot stock. It's obvious the world needs to cut fossil fuel use, but here is money being thrown there to gain profit and perpetuate these harmful practices. Profit is king. Collateral damage is of little concern. Fred?
There are opportunities for someone with that sentiment to invest in the market through environmentally and socially conscious funds. So there are opportunities. You don't have to put your money there.
Well, I mean, what do you want? Coal? You get natural gas, hell of a lot cleaner, you know? But also battery technology.
How about solar?
Perfect. I love it. You know, but the problem is you get an ice storm in Texas and everything freezes up. Point is, natural gas is a good way to go, but I also think battery technology, I think Tesla is going to really surprise us in the future.
All right. Another listener, Tom on Blue Mountain, asks, how much cash do you have on the sidelines? Fred, do you keep any cash?
We keep on average about 5% cash, just as frictional cash to take care of clients' cash needs.
Well, we started.
We're fully invested.
We've been heavy in cash since February, okay? And it just hadn't been a lot of opportunities out there. And so we're heavy in cash.
Heavy in cash.
Very heavy.
Well, you're not going to gain anything off cash.
Yeah, but I'm not going to lose anything. Well, so you keep talking about how risky I am.
You're losing 5% in purchasing power.
I've been out of this market for all during this drop.
Well, why not put the cash into a safer, more consistent.
Like what?
Like Microsoft, like Apple.
Well, it's going down too.
Well,
Apple's going down.
Apple's been consistently going up.
Check
though,
it lately.
Year to year.
Well, I'm just saying, you're talking
When's
about
the last time Apple had a bad year?
I don't know, but I'm just telling you, right now, the market is in a correction right now. Every correction I've ever been involved in turns into every bear market I've ever had started with a correction.
So you're just holding the cash.
I'm just holding the cash till I find things stabilize. I'm a trend follower. Right now, the trends are down.
All right.
The trends are down right now.
But Fred, you pretty much, as Nick Saban would call it, the process. You go to work every day and you follow the process.
We find that discipline and process pays off over the long run. And what we don't have to end up doing is speculating on what the next hot stock is. Our clients, we want to find out what's important to them, what they want out of life. Do they have the means to get it? And are they prepared for life surprises? The investments seem, at least in 34 years of doing this, they take care of themselves. It's a matter of not making mistakes.
All right. Got to roll. But Andy, how many years for you, Andy?
Consistency is critical.
How many years?
Over 40.
Over 40.
Started when I was 21. Right. I'm 67. Right. So what's that?
There you go. You know? All right. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support. Until tomorrow, thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.